Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session, and this time I'm actually looking across to see my partner and co-host, Steve, sitting here, not connected by a Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. I think we're close to 6 feet.
Yeah.
We should be good.
Yeah.
Anyway, the whole social distancing thing remains a thing. We'll stick to the rules, but...
We'll talk coronavirus in a little bit, but... You know, figured we would just jump right into it. So, how familiar are you with this whole Russian bounty story?
What I understand is that our intelligence has said that the Russians were paying Taliban fighters bounties for killing U.S. soldiers and continue to do so.
Right.
All right.
So the question is, what is the U.S. response? Like, the New York Times published the story. There were multiple... other media outlets that have stated that they've confirmed the story was brought up to Trump. Trump's response was, I wasn't briefed on the story, right? I wasn't briefed on this by our intelligence agencies. I'm just finding out now. And then he immediately goes into the New York Times as fake news. And, you know, they're not confirming who their sources are. You know, he's attacking the unnamed sources. And then he goes on and attacks Biden and Obama, that they were soft on Russia and they wanted them out of the G7 and all this other stuff. Like, kind of just deflecting, right?
Right, sure. So out of character.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as the story hits, you know that his immediate response is going to be to attack the messenger, which, there it is, New York Times. He did, right. Fake news, via tweet this morning. And then, obviously, he's got to attack Obama at every possible turn. And I guess my thing is, listen, to me this isn't as much about Trump. I mean, the fact that we don't know if he was briefed on it or not, I don't want to put too much on that. And the reason why is the intelligence agencies receive a number of reports about threats to the United States, to U.S. troops, all the time. I don't think the president gets briefed on every single threat. But it's hard to believe that if they had confirmed that, you know, another state is paying, you know, a terrorist organization basically to take out U.S. soldiers, then that's something that the president would be briefed on, right?
I would think that would be pretty high on the list of presidential daily briefings.
Yeah.
If he even has them, I honestly don't know if he does. I mean, he does.
So the question then just comes out to whether he was briefed on this or not. And then if he was briefed, did he acknowledge it? Did he not? Did he, you know, what sort of plan was put into action? And you know, there are people who are going to say, they're going to come out and defend the president and say, basically, it's none of your business, right? Like, the president gets briefed on a number of things every day, and you don't know everything that he does. So, you know, he's choosing not to, you know, put this out there. It's confidential, blah, blah, blah. And like, well, listen, I'm a U.S. citizen. I want to know what the hell went on here and what's going on. And I want to know, like, I mean, I got friends in the military that are over there right now. I want to know what's being done to protect them now that we have this information.
The question I have is, are you even slightly shocked that Russia would do this? Because I'm not. No. I mean, I don't think...
It's also annoying that there's no condemnation of Russia for doing this other than I'm really hard on Russia. Right.
No, you really have a hard on for Russia, is how I respond.
Yeah, I mean, what does the president coming out and saying that he's got to, you know, that he's condemning Russia for this? What does it actually do? I mean, it sends a message, right? Or now are we just at the point where we're going to apologize for anything that Trump does? Right, like, is above reproach and above critique, right? Like, you just can't, like, there's nothing that he does or says that can be critiqued or can be analyzed or looked at and say, you know what, he did this wrong. right? Like, is that just kind of where we're at now? If you're a Trump supporter, if you're a Trump supporter, like the only, like that's just the only, like there's just no criticism of him that that's due. I just think it's kind of getting ridiculous. Now, I can also go to the other side and I can say that the constant attack on him and everything he does and says, that, like, there's plenty of ridiculousness that goes on the other side. But I mean, this is a serious fucking issue, right? I mean, you're talking about a state actor that's, you know, waging war against
proxy
our troops.
Proxy war against us,
yeah. Yeah, proxy war against our troops. I think I want to know more as to what's going on, what he knew and what the process is and how it's being addressed. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I know it's fair. I would ask the question, did the Cold War ever really end, or did we just kind of push it aside? Is it like some series that's still on Nickelodeon that we forgot was still there but has never gone away?
I mean, I think, Russia went down. We dealt them a huge blow. Their economy went to shit. I think we tried to play nice with them, through the 90s, early 2000s. Once Putin kind of came back to power, the oligarchs took over. I think things took a turn, right? Like, I mean, Putin had much bigger, broader plans than Gorbachev and what was the other guy's name? Boris Yeltsin.
Yeltsin, yeah. Okay.
And he had much, bigger and more, I guess, almost sinister plans in a way. And if you look at the way that they're expanding in the Middle East and in Africa, then I think that backs that up. So did the Cold War ever end? I would say no. It was maybe put on ice for a little bit. And it's different now. It's not so much about, it's not as much a nuclear arms race as it is just overall power and resource race.
More economic than
nuclear. Yes and no. I mean, I think it is... Yes, about economics, absolutely, in terms of, having control over oil and, other various resources that they're finding, that they're mining out of Africa. There's a lot to it more than just, who can build the bigger and more bombs.
Right. But, I mean, we in the 80s supported the Mujahideen and the rebels in the rebels, weren't rebels, the Afghans. We supported them. We supported fucking Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Because we knew that Russia was spending a shit ton of resources fighting a war that was not gaining them anything. Now then we go into Afghanistan, which I think was the right thing to do militarily because they did harbor Al-Qaeda. But we haven't gotten out of there. And the more time we spend there, the more resources we spend there, we're bleeding out money. And I'm sure someone in Russia is like, if we just say... I don't know what the bounty was, but is this much money to keep this war going? So if you kill an American soldier, we'll pay you. They're not even doing anything as aggressive as what we did in the 80s in terms of, like, we provided arms. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they are, too. And maybe they're making the Russian version of Charlie Wilson's War right now. But, which is not a very good movie, by the way. I like Tom Hanks, but that movie sucks. Anyway. I was not at all shocked to hear that this was happening. Now, the president's response to it or lack of response is a problem to me. And the bigger problem is, if he wasn't briefed, then whoever knew this and didn't tell the president should be fired immediately.
Yes.
And if the president did know about it and just can't admit it, frankly, that doesn't shock me at all. I'm sorry. It's too many times. I don't mean to defend it, that's how I feel.
And people are going to say that he shouldn't have to... He's not going to react just because, they're going to spin it and say that he shouldn't have to react to a story in the media about national security. Like, he should be able to control that narrative. And that's going to be the defense. It's not necessarily wrong, but I can still want to know what the fuck happened.
Absolutely.
Right. And so I'm asking the question. I just want to know, like, I'm not attacking you. I don't really care. I think the response attacking Obama and Biden is not useful.
It's typical, though.
It's typical, but it doesn't, like, attacking the New York Times for reporting the story also isn't useful. Like, those things are definitely worth criticism. But in terms of your response, like, I'm not attacking you. Can you, like, I just want to know, right? I just want to know. And I think I have at minimum, I have a right to ask, if not demand a response.
And I think a reasonable response would be, there's lots of things going on. We're aware of them. and we're doing what we can to keep our soldiers safe. Even if, you know, he's not going to provide you details on
exactly. Whatever. I mean,
but
just
acknowledging it would be
right. And
adult.
And I don't think, and I'm just asking for an acknowledgement, right? And then someone will say, well, if he's not going to give you, you know, specific details, then what does it matter? It just matters in terms of my opinion of him, right? Like, these are the sort of things, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of shit that the president does that he can't tell you about or doesn't tell you about. That goes on from day to day, like every single president, right? Like no president sits there and gives you a list of every single thing they did throughout the course of the day, with, you know, strategy and logistics and everything else, right? They don't. So you base your opinion off of kind of how they're the things that they enact, the policies that they write, like their speeches, their tone, all that stuff. We go with what we have, right? So what he puts out is what I have to go off of. What he puts out, I don't like. Therefore, I'm not voting for him. Period.
Sure.
Right? Now, if you want to point to, like, well, what is Biden putting out that you do like? Nothing. Nothing. He hasn't put anything out that I like in 20 years. I just know that I really can't fucking stand Trump. So I'm stuck with a fucking turd sandwich and a douche, and now I have to make a decision.
Right. Well, so Biden's strategy, they're calling it the basement strategy, which is basically lock him in the basement and don't have him show up and say anything. And that's probably the best strategy. Just the less he talks, the better off we are. And I've typically been a supporter of Biden. He's certainly not my first choice, and I do have concerns about him currently. But if your opponent is just going to sit there and say stupid shit and lose support just by running his fucking mouth, having the common sense to shut the fuck up can be an amazingly powerful tool.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
that's purely political strategy to Mr. Just Win Baby.
Okay, Hillary tried that strategy, and what is she doing right now? What is Hillary Clinton doing right now that is helping any fucking body besides her grandchildren? Not a goddamn thing.
But I don't think Hillary was good at shutting the fuck up.
Yeah, no, that was the strategy, right? Towards the end of the election, after you got to, September? Hillary basically fucking disappeared. Right, she didn't go anywhere. That was a big problem.
True. She didn't have a ground game. That's for sure.
Like, she didn't go anywhere. Like, she physically didn't go anywhere.
It raised a lot of questions about her health, which I think also hurt her cause.
Right. I mean, she played the same game. Joe Biden's just implementing the strategy earlier in the process.
But this is the time to implement that strategy. Just don't fuck up now. Kick it into gear in September, October.
Okay. I mean, that's fine.
The difference is Trump running his yap in 2016 wasn't hurting him nearly as much as it probably should have. Right now, he is killing himself with tripping all over himself, flipping stories, looking like a jackass. He's got 3 years of you know, on-the-job experience now, and he was the alternative to I don't want the same old thing anymore in 2016. Now I think a lot of people are saying, I'm done with this fucking guy.
I don't agree. I mean, I had, you know, Biden and the Trump polls further down the list on the whiteboard, but we're already down there, so we'll just talk. We'll talk about it. I don't think that the, I know what's being put out in the media in terms of, you know, the waning support for Trump and, you know, what the map looks like now based off of polls, national polls and state polls, but, you know, I just like going. You know, when you actually look at the state polls, you know, a lot of what I'm seeing, especially when you bring in the margin of error, is that it's pretty much a dead heat. It's very close in a lot of states that if you listen to CNN and MSNBC, they're saying Biden's way out ahead. You know, the only one that I really agree with that Biden is further ahead than I would have thought is Florida. Florida is, you know, he's got in every poll that I've looked at, he's got about a 7-point lead with a margin of error of two, you know, between 2 and 5. So if it's up to 5, then that's a 2-point lead, and that's not a huge lead. It's still close, but that's still the biggest one. And everything else is much closer across the board. If there's enough results to where you can actually, you know, derive anything from it, the rest of the states, you know, it's back and forth, or it's where you think that they would be, like New York, Connecticut, All those are trending towards Biden, and then you know all your southern states and most of your Midwestern states are towards Trump. So, you know, I'm
with you in not trusting polls. By the way, we trusted polls in 2016, and that's right, where it got us.
And so I think, you know, this idea that there are this many people in the middle that held their nose and voted for Trump last time, but are willing to jump to Biden and jump to the Democrats and things like that. I don't trust that, and a lot of that has to do with what's going on right now, right? Like there's a lot of people who aren't a fan of Trump, but who also are not a fan of the movement, of the protest, of
right.
Black Lives Matter, of any, you know, all of that. They hear all of that and it's like nails on a chalkboard to them. You know, they may not like Trump's response to the coronavirus, and so maybe before the George Floyd and the protests and all that stuff, maybe that was getting them off the bandwagon. But then once that stuff came back into play, then it kind of was like, oh, whoa, hold on. Now, the other side of it is, I think you're seeing more, you're seeing a bigger and different response to protests and these sort of, you know, socio-political issues than you have in the past. You're getting a bigger response from you know, white people, and really corporate America is really kind of the big one, you know, making their voice heard on this. Now, why they're doing it strictly for the dollars, right? I mean, that's the chord, that's the tone that's being set. So, and people are demanding, like, listen, corporate America, they're basically holding them hostage with their dollars, right? They're saying, if you don't say something about racism and inequality, then we're going to withhold our dollars from you. Corporations don't like that. So you're seeing corporations from across the board, right? All the junk email I get, you know, that I don't even know that I sign up for, all of them have sent out emails at Jack and Dick's Pharmacy or Bill and Bob's Shaving. You know, we really don't like racism and we think it's terrible, right? Like, I mean, I have so many of those emails in my inbox over the last probably, you know, month and a half, that it's laughable now, right? Like, I mean, and they're doing it for a very specific reason. So that is different than what we've seen in the past, but I don't know if it's enough to really shift the electoral map to a place where I'm going to sit there and say Biden is clearly ahead. He's the front runner. He's going to win this thing. And I see a lot of that going on right now already, and I called it out on Twitter. Like, you guys are falling into the same fucking traps that you fell in 2016. Don't get comfortable with this. And you also have a lot of people that are not being polled, and a lot of your polling is dominated in fucking California and New York, which is a big part of the polling issue.
I can't get on Facebook without getting asked to participate in a poll.
Oh, look at that.
Do we need to pause here?
No, it's a giant deer in my backyard.
I can't see it from my angle.
How can you not see that deer?
Because of where I'm sitting. Oh. By the way, I feel good doing this because I've watched so many like national shows have not have deer jump in their backyard, but have you know, glitches. James Carville was on Bill Maher the other night and completely had his image froze, or sorry, had his audio fail, and he's walking around the house carrying his computer.
What, you're, James Carville or Bill
James
Maher?
Carville. But Maher was fine, but Carville was like completely out of it.
So you've got James Carville walking around his house, you know, as you know, middle-aged guy with tech issues, and it's James Carville, so you're up close in his very, very not sexy face.
There was definitely some of that.
Sorry, I got to get this picture for my kid.
All right, so we're technical difficulties, just there was a deer.
You know, nature happening. I often joke that my backyard is kind of like a scene from Snow White where all the animals come. Just because I constantly get just random bunnies, chipmunks, squirrels, deer, owls.
The other day we saw a robin attack a squirrel in your front yard, which is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
It gets wild over here. But my daughter will appreciate the deer, so I had to capture the moment.
Fair.
All right. So, you know, I mean, we were talking about the polls and things like that, and I think my point is clear, and I don't even think you're necessarily disagreeing with me. I guess for me, it's just let's temper the expectation, let's temper the calls, you know, saying how far out of a lead that Biden has. I just think that that's not representing what's happening. I think it's just not a true representation of what's actually happening.
I think in part you're annoyed and fearful because the last time around we were told this was a done deal and it didn't go that way. And
right, but yeah. I mean, and you know, we go back to this, but we went. This is the exact same thing we went through. Now you're, you're more open minded to what I'm saying this time around. But you know, I was banging the drum like, listen, Trump is like he seriously got a chance here, right? And we didn't have the data points then that we have now. Like, I mean, it's right. Not that we were that far off, but we have more information and more access than we did then, and that's telling us that this thing is a lot closer than I think a lot of people, are, for whatever reason, are willing to accept. It's almost like, you know, if we just say that Biden's ahead, then maybe Trump supporters will be intimidated and not vote. I don't know.
I don't like that. I think, inflames their desire to get out there and vote.
Exactly. I mean, I think it does the exact opposite. Now, why they're doing it? Now, you know, is it that CNN and MSNBC and all these, you know, sort of left-leaning organizations, are they just lazy? Or are they trying to put a specific narrative out there? I mean, I think we both know the answer to that question. They're obviously trying to drive a narrative. I just don't know how they see that it's going to be effective. And that bothers me, right? Like, just fucking put the information out there as it actually is. You don't need to spin it. You don't need to do anything. Let people do, like, that would be so much more effective in this case, I think, in ultimately doing what they would want to happen if they just put the information as it was and let people realize that it is a close race and that their votes do matter. And then you move from there. But now we have what we have, so...
No, the disincentive, the Bernie bro types who said last time, I'm not going to vote because I didn't get my guy and it's not going to matter anyway, they can't get back into that mindset if Biden's going to win.
Right, and that's a... That, you know, that's a different issue, I think, because, you know, how do you cater to them, right? Like, how do you cater to them and keep them engaged? You know, I'm not sure.
Just keep saying Supreme Court nominations. That's what I'm doing.
I don't know. To the greater whole, I get it to, like, your smaller group, yes. And that's really all you can control, right?
Sure.
It's just who's around you. So if that works for the group around you, then, bang the drum.
Whenever anyone says, why should I do it, it's all the same thing. That's my response immediately. Supreme Court nominations. Ginsburg is not going to be around for four more years if I had to bet on it.
And honestly, to me, it's not even Supreme Court nominations because I have more faith in people on the Supreme Court than I do just judges on the federal level, right?
Right.
I mean, because that matters. You need judges on the federal level to get the appropriate cases to the Supreme Court. You know,
sure.
I mean, you can't just me and you decide that we're going to sue somebody and then skip over everything and get to the Supreme Court for the ultimate decision. Like, there's a long process to get there. And that's more concerning to me is who Trump is appointing to federal judgeships because, you know, like, those are the sort of things that matter that impact this thing. With the Supreme Court, I just trust the jurisprudence once you get to that level more. I mean, than I do.
We talked about it last show.
Right.
Gorsuch will break ranks at times, and Roberts will break ranks at times. Cause
and we've seen Kavanaugh. I mean, we've seen Kavanaugh at this point break ranks as well. So, again, like I said, I'm not as much worried about that. That does matter. But just, you know, that's where winning and losing.
Right. Well, and the worst part, you're dead right that what happens at the federal level is very important. And it's stuff we don't see. I don't see, unless it's something really dramatic, I don't see who's getting voted to these district court positions, but they impact people's lives a hell of a lot more than most elected officials, most congressmen and senators and
right.
even presidents. All right, we got to talk about the fucking coronavirus again, Steve, because
yeah, we
shit's
do.
Going
I mean,
wild
I,
in California.
You know, I mean, I think your exasperation with it is part of the issue, right?
Yeah.
I'm not blaming you, but...
No,
but, I mean, everyone's just like, all right, I'm tired of this. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's over. I'm moving on. Boom, bam, done, right? And so, okay, that's fine. And people are taking this approach in their day-to-day, and we're seeing it tick back up, and we're seeing rising, you know, an increase in the numbers. Now, there's multiple reasons why. One, there is more testing. So, you know, Trump said, well, with more testing, you're going to get more positive results. Yes,
is that's true. That's a truthful statement.
Now,
it's dumb, but it's truthful.
Well, it's, I mean, he's correct.
He's absolutely right.
Right? That's like, a truthful statement. And so you are seeing, which is a good thing, there's more tests, more people are being tested, so we're finding out better numbers in terms of who had it and how who has it and how widespread it is. And what we're finding out is that there is a lot of people who have it. We're seeing it in the younger population from 18 to 45, that, you know, in that demographic. And so it's good to know who has it. Also, the reason why it's good is because so far the mortality rate is dropping, right? There are less people yeah. dying because of it. So you're finding more positive tests, less people are dying. That's good. You hope it stays that way, because, you know, the flip side is that if it's because of recent events, whether it's, you know, opening too soon and everyone's pointing to, well, it's all the protests and that's right. why. No, because if you look at where, you know, where these outbreaks are really happening, whether it's Arizona, Texas, Florida, things like that, it's usually it's looking like places that reopened a little too soon before they really flattened the curve. But then you also have places and pockets where there was protest and, you know, those numbers are going up as well. And then you have other places where there really weren't that many protests and the numbers are still going up. So I think the virus never went away. The virus didn't necessarily care that we were all pissed off about racism, right? The virus is still there. Right. We just stopped paying attention to it. So now we're seeing a spike. And so the question then becomes, you know, the question in the back of my mind is, you know, how do we deal with it? You know, I mean,
well, so when I'm out in public, I'm wearing a mask. Now, I'm being honest, when I'm out in public in places that make sense to wear a mask, I am. I have gone to a bar on multiple occasions since they reopened, and I fist bump. I don't handshake. I don't hug anybody. I keep my distance, but I can't wear a mask and go have a drink. Just can't do it. So when I'm going to Lowe's or whatever, I'm masked up, and I see lots of people who are not, and I've seen tons of evidence suggesting that masks help. I don't know why people are even arguing this. And there was a city council meeting or something in Palm Beach, Florida, and it was comical to hear they were all women that I saw talking about how we're, you know, one woman said, we're going to start making citizens' arrests if you make us wear masks. And one person called it communist. Like, what the? Just, you're saying words. Stop it. Put a fucking mask on or stay in.
Look, I don't know if masks help.
Yes, you do.
No, I actually don't. The CDC even came out and said, look, I mean, masks help if you're within a certain distance of a person sure. for an extended period of time.
Yes.
Otherwise, like, just in passing, like,
right.
like in a situation like in Lowe's, right, Lowe's is so fucking big. How often are you really within 6 feet of a person in Lowe's for any extended period of time? Unless you're talking to, you know, someone to help you, like, where can I find fucking wood screws or whatever it might be. I mean, so
Lowe's might have been a bad example. Grocery store is a better example. Because in grocery stores, people get in my space all the fucking time.
Right. Well, I mean, that sounds like you're mad at people in general. But, you know, I mean, and I think, so listen, the way I approach it is I wear it because if it works, I don't know if it works, but I don't want to find out that it does. And by not wearing it, I put someone at risk. Right,
that's the right approach.
You know, I mean, it's just like, listen, I'm gonna just better safe than sorry. You know, I got something that's comfortable for me that fits that has, they say, does what it's supposed to do. So that's all I give a shit about. It's comfortable enough to where it's not a complete annoyance. I have control over it. You know, I just pull it up over my face, covers my mouth and nose, and then when I'm in my truck. Or I'm just outside in wide open space. I'm not wearing it in the parking lot.
Me
either. I'm not. You know, someone would actually yell at me because I didn't have it on in the parking lot. And she, you know, she drove, you know, she goes out of her way to drive. And you need to have your mask on even in the parking lot. And I'm like, no, I don't. Yeah, you do. And I just walked around her car and she honked her horn at me and I just kept going.
All right.
Right. And then I pulled my mask up when I got in, you know, when I got into the store. Yep, right. I mean, it's just like, I'm not going to, like, it's, no, I'm not going to do it.
What cracks me up is I've been in the metro parks a few times and there's people riding bikes wearing a mask. It's
like, well, I guess the thought is just to, like, you're in a wide open space. But I mean, you can, okay, so that actually makes more sense than just walking in a parking lot. And the reason why, you're sweating, you're breathing out. You know, I know, like, when I work out, like, the other day I was squatting in the gym. None of us are wearing masks. Shame on us, I guess, based off this conversation. But when I came up, I kind of laughed because I fired something out of my mouth. I don't know what it was. And I watched it go way out, and then it landed, like, probably 6-7 feet away. And I kind of, like, laughed, and then I went down, I did another rep, and then I racked it. And then I went over, immediately grabbed the spray bottle, and kind of wiped that spot where I saw it land. And thought, huh, we should probably be wearing masks in here. We're not helping the situation. But, you know, okay, fine, whatever. It is what it is.
Well, but the Florida solution to say, we're not shutting bars down, we're just saying you can't sell alcohol in them anymore, is...
What the hell is that? I don't...
It's hilarious to me.
So
I'll tell you what the rationale is. They can not tell a business to close down without a legal fight. But the state liquor board can say, we're suspending your ability to sell alcohol, and if you break this rule, we'll take away your license going forward. So that's much more easy to enforce than saying you can't be open. It's like saying you can, strip clubs can stay open, but you can't take your clothes off.
I mean, I get it, but it's just, okay.
It's a legal thing. And I honestly, if I had to bet, I would say that the governor was not going to put himself in a situation where he made it look like he was doing it. So he let their state board of health deal with it and deflect the heat from himself, because he's been riding Trump's coattails for a very long time. And for him to go against Trump in Florida, coming onto an election, I think DeSantis just needs to cover his ass. That's speculation on my part, but I think all the pieces fit.
I mean, I guess. I mean, but some of those bars, I don't know how that helps them, because if they can't sell alcohol...
Oh, it doesn't.
You know, no, I mean...
It's essentially shutting them down without having to go through the legal
struggle. Unless they serve food. If they serve food, then okay, but if you can serve food, why can't you serve alcohol?
I think they're well aware. I don't think they're... Licensing issue is the same for food as it is for alcohol.
It's not. I just
so it's a legal it's a legal workaround.
I mean, but I either think it's just close them or leave them open. It's just and that's the frustrating part, right? Like, this is about politics. It's really been politicized, and it's just, it's unfortunate, right? And I think there's plenty of blame to go around as to the politicalization of this, but you're not helping anybody. Right, like, you're not helping these bars by saying you can't serve alcohol, but you can serve food. But if you serve alcohol, we're going to think you're not helping them by, you know, this middle of the road approach. You're not helping the people, your constituents. You're not doing anything to actually slow the virus. People can still come,
but they're not going to.
Well, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, people may still. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if for some period of time you did see people going and just saying, see how stupid this is? We're still here. We might as well be allowed to have a drink.
I'm going to eat nachos for 4 straight hours. Well, I think it's going to be an effective way to reduce the number of people who go to bars. And it's a very easy thing to enforce. And like I said, because of licensing agencies, they can literally just say, you broke this rule. We're suspending your license. I've seen it happen to bars in Lakewood. And it can be pretty much effective immediately. And it's the one thing that will scare businesses into actually complying by the rules, even if it sucks. I mean, it sucks. I get it. I've got friends in Florida. I'm not going to Florida and staying sober.
Yeah.
All right. So, did you see the story about the Wilmington, North Carolina cops getting caught on a hot mic?
I did. You know, and I think it's interesting that the police said, I'm not racist. You know, I mean, I said these things, but I'm definitely not racist. And it's just like,
the things they said were about as ugly as it gets. We need a second civil war.
Right. Like, I can't wait for the civil war. We're going to slaughter those niggers. Is that racist? I had a woman today. I had a nigger woman today. She needed a bullet in her head. Like that. I mean, it's, you know, 45 minute conversation. And I mean, it's littered with nigger, Negroes, you know, just all sorts of insults.
War.
And so, you know, I mean, and it's just like, look, man, I, this is the sort of thing where it's funny. I just thought it was interesting that the guy gets fired and he's just like, well, I'm not racist. It's like, I don't know how you're saying that. Right? Like, I mean, I don't know how you're saying it with a straight face. Like, I'm not the type that's going to label every, white person racist for everything that they do. But when you make these statements, right. I'm not exactly sure what else you expect to be called.
I'm just an American man. I'm just venting because I'm stressed. I'm sorry you're stressed, but part of the reason you're stressed is because you say and think things like that. And it's so much worse when you didn't think you were going to get hurt. Like when someone says something stupid and racist in public, that's dumb, but that can be just right. stupid.
I mean, this is supposed to be a private conversation. I'm not sure. Like somehow, I think his mic got he started recording the conversation and didn't realize it. So it's on him,
right?
Right. I mean, it's on you for not knowing your equipment or the status of your equipment. And then this is the conversation that you're having, right? Like, I mean, sure. this is, you thought that you were in the privacy of, your phone conversation, and these are your thoughts. So,
and you were on the job when you said them.
Right.
And whenever someone says like, how would you feel if you were constantly being monitored? One, I kind of am. So are you.
Right.
And two, if I was sitting in a client's office and said anything resembling that, I'd be fired like that. And I fucking should be.
Right,
like, so the idea that this is defensible, like, is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's not defensible, and I think most people will agree that these cops should be fired.
Yep.
Right. I mean, and then the question is, like, there's going to be somebody out there who's going to make an argument that they shouldn't be.
Freedom of speech.
And you know, if you're going to go to the freedom of speech thing, I don't know how
you
many
know
times.
I was being sarcastic.
Right? I do. No. I know you were. I'm just saying, like, I don't know how many times we have to say that, you're free. Now,
you're not going to jail for what you said, but right, you don't have to keep your job.
The issue that the free speech issue here is that they are working for the government, right? And so there is a little bit of a free speech issue to a degree, but not, I mean, it's not something that you're going to be able to build a case on.
Right. Well, again, if someone was saying, put these cops in jail for what they said, I would vehemently say, no, what they said is gross.
Right.
But you should not go to prison for that. Based on the First Amendment. However, I don't want you carrying a gun and a badge and walking the streets for what you obviously feel. Again, these guys didn't know that they were being right. recorded, and what people say when they're not aware of what's going on right. them, I mean, bothers just, me a I whole mean, lot more.
The guy says he's going to go out and buy an AR-15 rifle so that he's ready for the Civil War so he could slaughter niggers. I mean,
that's
sorry, I don't necessarily believe that I trust that you are going to protect and serve me if I call.
I think that's a pretty reasonable fear. And fuck these guys. So I heard about it and I didn't really do any research into it, but NASCAR has one black driver that I'm aware of, and his name is Bubba Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that a noose was found in the garage where his car was being serviced. That's basically where my knowledge ends.
Yeah, so NASCAR, before, during their pre-race inspection, NASCAR officials found a noose in his garage. So it was hanging from the pull rope, the pull rope for the garage door was formed into a noose. And it, like, saw pictures of it. And so I saw a few different pictures of it. It's not very big, but it's clearly a noose. There's no...
You don't do that by accident.
There's no mistaking what it is. It's not some other type of knot. It's a noose. And so, yes, exactly. It's not something that you could do by accident. It's not an actual easy knot to tie. And it's not something that's just commonly seen in garages, right?
I've never seen a noose in a garage before.
Right. I mean, my dad has worked in, he's an airplane mechanic and has worked on all sorts of engines my entire life. I've been in garages a ton. I have never seen anything like this. And I've got plenty of friends who actually, race cars on much, much lower levels than NASCAR. Oh, the deer's back. Have never seen anything like it. So why there was a noose in this garage, that question is yet to be answered. NASCAR immediately puts out a statement. They call in the FBI. FBI does an investigation and comes to find out that the noose was there at least probably since October, November of 2019. Now, nobody noticed it, and nobody said anything, and I think maybe there was a heightened sense of just kind of heightened awareness, given where we are in terms of protest and everything else. So someone saw it, recognized it, and called it out, and I think that, you know, that makes sense, right? Like, I mean, you only have one black driver in NASCAR. NASCAR has issues with the Confederate flag. They just had this whole thing about taking it down and not, you know, allowing it at races anymore. So then a noose pops up in your only black driver's garage. So, yeah, it was right for them to be alarmed and try to make sure that you didn't have... And I think the feeling should be, to a little bit, should be, all right, good, I'm relieved that this actually wasn't a targeted thing at Bubba Wallace, right? But then the other question is, why was it there in the first place? How did it go unnoticed for so long? But is
it's
that
a little weird that the FBI gets called in, though, isn't it? I mean, isn't that more of a state local thing?
No, I mean, that's
I guess if it's investigating a hate crime, that's a federal thing, so.
Right? I mean, it's a
all right. Yeah, I mean, myself out of it.
And I think, listen, you want this, you want it solved. NASCAR is a large enough entity where they can call on the FBI for their services because they, you know, I mean, they're a multi-state corporation, right? Like, I mean, they have races all across the country. True. And so, I mean, they've got multiple, you know, multiple raceways and things like that in different states and regions, you know, so that gives the FBI the grounds to investigate it when you throw it all together in the same
box. I guess that makes sense. So there's been a lot of reaction to things that are racist or you know, have been racially insensitive and tolerated for years. And two things that have gotten a lot of attention are the brands Uncle Ben's Rice and Aunt Jemima Syrup. Now, I think the best person to talk about this is the 49-year-old white guy. So that was supposed to be funny. Didn't work. I'll try again.
Just keep going.
Okay, all right.
Don't try again. Just keep going.
The Aunt Jemima thing, I get why that's offensive. I mean, that's a caricature of
So I do want to say one thing about this. So I was listening to a Trump, I'm not sure, I guess it was a rally or something, last night on C-SPAN. You know, crazy Saturday night I had. But actually I started watching the Democratic Conference, the Copenhagen Conference for Democracy or something like that. On C-SPAN, which the title sounds really dry, but it was Mike Pompeo.
You know how to party, man.
Yeah, it was Mike Pompeo, and it was actually really interesting. You know, Mike Pompeo, when not playing to Trump and, you know, not kissing up to him, actually is a really interesting guy. And it was just a really interesting thing to listen to. I did call myself out on it and realize, like, I need to fucking do something better with my time. So I decided to smoke a bunch of chicken breasts last night at fucking 10 o'clock at night. But still, and it led into, while I was smoking the chicken breasts, this thing with Trump is on. So anyway, he has this young girl on who, she said something on Twitter about racism and, you know, being a Trump supporter and not being racist, but saying that as a Christian, basically Christians can't be racist because it's against... Okay,
they really shouldn't.
Right, and then she went on to say some other things that if you know, Black Lives Matter really cared about Black lives, they would defund Planned Parenthood and that whole argument. Okay, fine, great. You know, and my own issues with you know, the whole abortion debate, but I don't think that you and I should be the ones engaging in that conversation. You know, just it's just not our lane.
Right.
But so she gets to the Aunt Jemima and the Uncle Ben thing, and she says something. She says, you know, everyone, you know, Black Lives Matter and you know, the progressive left want Aunt Jemima removed, but they don't even know the history of it. And then she proceeds to literally tell a lie. And I don't know if it was intentional or she just didn't know that what she was saying was completely inaccurate. But she says that Aunt Jemima was based off of a freed slave who, you know, made this amazing pancake batter. She was discovered at the, you know, one of the world's fairs and then, you know, linked up with a company that would eventually become, you know, General Mills and Quaker, you know, the people who make Quaker and all that other stuff. And then that's how, you know, the legend of Aunt Jemima came to be. That's not true at all, right?
Okay, I mean, I don't know the history.
No, I mean, so there was a guy who had a pancake batter, and the original name of it was like, you know, breakfast pancake batter or something, okay. Right? And it was a really good mix, but he was having trouble, you know, getting traction. He went to vaudeville. This was in, I want to say, the early, like, 1920s or something like that, okay. Maybe a little bit before. And he hears a song, and do you know what vaudeville is?
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, so essentially
singing
it was,
internet, yeah.
Yeah, it was mostly white people portraying black people with blackface, and that's where a lot of this, the issues with blackface comes from, in a very sort of stereotypical and negative way. But he hears this song, Aunt Jemima, was actually written by a black stage performer. And the guy with the pancake batter says, oh, you know what? I like that song. And so I'm going to change the name from, you know, Breakfast Pancake Batter to Aunt Jemima, the name of the song, right?
Okay.
So then he and his partner end up selling their company to a company that ends up becoming, you know, Quaker and, you know, General Mills and all that stuff. I keep saying General Mills, but I'm
not
sure.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So they end up selling the company to them. But in the meantime, like, so it's got this name, Aunt Jemima, and then they basically come up with, they create the character to match the name that came from a song.
Okay.
Right? And then once they match the character, then they had different women play the character at different fairs and events. And you know, there have been women who have played the Aunt Jemima role for, you know, 5, 10, 15. I think one woman was Aunt Jemima for like 20 years.
Okay.
But the actual character itself came from a song and was, you know, and the history is a little bit shaky on this, but there was a white man in blackface playing the black female character, you know, with very negative connotations. And again, that's where it comes from. So there's nothing good about the character. Now, there are people who will argue, well, what about the women who played the character? Because for them, you know, there weren't a lot of black women getting roles as actresses or spokespeople for different companies, so their legacy shouldn't be erased, and the character should stay, and black people should be proud.
Okay.
Like, I mean, and that's their argument, and they feel that it's a legitimate argument. And I mean, these are the families of the women who played it. So I don't want to completely say that that's not a legitimate argument for them, because, listen, I mean, it was something. There's something worth acknowledging when you have a black spokesperson. The issue is the way that person's image was used, right? It's derogatory, right? I mean, the Aunt Jemima character was a slave who served her white masters willingly and happily.
Right.
Right? Like, so I'm not sure why we want to promote that as a good thing, and I get that your family was a part of this, right? And it was good for your family, but it wasn't great. We don't necessarily have to erase the history. You could just say and
put
stop it
in a regular fucking bottle. And put a, I don't know. To me, people fighting to save the Aunt Jemima thing, like, it really matters to them, is what cracks me up.
Yeah.
Because, like, no one gives a fuck about the shape of the bottle that your syrup comes in. And I've seen some people saying, like, I'm never going to buy that again.
Ooh,
oh, not that.
You're confusing things. You're thinking of Mrs. Butterworth.
Oh,
Mrs. Buttersworth.
Mrs. Buttersworth's a shape. Okay. And Jemima's just an image on a bottle. And an
on
image
a box.
And it's got the bandana. And,
yeah.
Okay. Oops.
Okay.
All right. So should we get rid of Mrs. Butterworth, too? Because it's kind of the same thing.
Although Mrs. Butterworth, I mean, you can make an argument that you can't really tell the race of Mrs. Buttersworth. I hate descending into that level of identity politics, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're seriously debating a syrup bottle, right? I mean, like, it's sort of nondescript. Mrs. Buttersworth, I mean, like, that could be, you know, I mean, Mr. Bigglesworth was a skinless cat in fucking right. Austin Powers, right?
Like, so, but can we talk Uncle Ben, though? Because I've heard mixed things about Uncle Ben, and I don't know the history there, but okay. I've seen one friend who's a comic and he is black, put a thing saying basically, like, Uncle Ben represents a successful businessman whose image is being used because he created this great brand. Now, the guy who says that says so much ignorant shit all the time that I frankly just don't take anything he says seriously, but He could be right. I don't know.
Do Who's you? The successful businessman?
Uncle Ben. Oh. Uncle Ben as a person was a successful businessman, and that's why his image is on there. And
okay, but his name isn't Uncle Ben.
Okay.
Right, the actual character's name is like Rasmus, I think.
Okay.
So I don't actually know the history of Uncle Ben's, like, I mean, in my family, dad was really big on not having either in the house. He didn't like the images. He thought that they were derogatory and was really big. We used what was the blue box
of rice?
No, for pancake batter. There was, we used, it was in a small Jiffy.
Okay.
We used
but Uncle Ben is rice, typically.
Yeah, Uncle Ben is rice, but he didn't like Aunt Jemima either. So we used, you know, Jiffy for pancake batter and cornbread and stuff like that, and you know, syrup was, for a long time it was Log Cabin, and then I later just got into just pure maple syrup.
See, I have,
and became a syrup snob.
Your fondness for waffles far exceeds mine.
I love me a good Belgian waffle. I got a Belgian waffle maker.
We had this conversation in a hotel once. Like, the hotel didn't have waffle, or about a hotel. We were both in Maryland. Or
yeah,
something,
when we were in Frederick, I was fired up, pissed because that was especially when I was traveling a lot. You know, that was one of the things that I looked forward to was the, you know, Belgian waffle. You make your own Belgian waffle. Sometimes they get a little crazy. Add some blueberries in there or something like that. And then, you know, you pour the syrup over. But I
got to
a point where I was traveling with my own, like, maple syrup from my Belgian waffles that I would make in the hotel. It was wonderful. And then that's why I was pissed, because now I got this Belgian, this maple syrup.
You had to do it in a checked bag.
Yes, and then I had nothing to fucking put it on, so I was really annoyed.
Okay, you left that out when we were having this conversation with Frederick. And I thought you were taking it a little bit too far.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I mean, I remember the conversation, it would have been 3 years ago, probably.
Yeah. But
okay, now I understand.
So yeah. Anyway, to say, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the history of Uncle Ben, but my dad was not a fan of having it in the house, so I never bought the rice. Right. I mean, and Uncle Ben's is expensive anyway. And so I just buy giant bags of rice, you know, with no face on it of any race or color, and, you know, put it in the rice cooker.
Okay, I mean, I do my rice. I don't know. I'm sure I've bought Uncle Ben stuff because they have the instant packs. And so I'm sure I've bought those before because you can nuke them for 90 seconds and they're done.
Yeah, I mean, but anybody who makes rice, I mean, they all have them. So,
all right. You know. And I don't.
I'm not saying you need the boycott in one way or another. But it's something that was, you know, in my house, so whatever.
But again, the level of outrage amongst white people with, how can you do this to me? One of my friends on Facebook posted, now they're changing the name of Eskimo pies. What's next? Swiss chalet? I'm like, shut the fuck up. You are not hurt by changing the image on Uncle Ben. You're not hurt by changing the image on the Aunt Jemima bottle. It's that whole victimization thing coming out again.
But there's a different conversation that went on this week. Sean King, he's on Twitter. I'm not sure what publication he's with, if he's with one. Sean King,
might be CNN still.
No, I mean he may.
He's a contributor.
I don't know. I don't care. But he put out a tweet saying that images of Jesus and the apostles and, you know, anyone from the Bible essentially being portrayed as white, you know, European-looking people should be removed from churches because it's racist and it's not a true representation of what those people would have looked like, and, like, all those images should come down. Obviously, everybody on the progressive left bangs the drum, says, yes, this makes sense, it should happen. An actual bishop or someone of... maybe a cardinal came out and agreed with him. Someone from Canterbury came out and said, yes, that is racist. It was done, you know, because of white supremacy, and so they should come down. I personally disagree. I don't think it's a good idea to fuck with people's religion. I don't. All right. I'm not a religious person. You know, I punted on religion a while back, but I still don't think it makes sense to fuck with it. You know, because I think that it could be taken one, it can be taken too far, and easily turn, you know, from, all right, we're going to take this down to, you know, I can see where it leads to violence. I mean, people are very passionate about religion one way or another, you know.
Sure.
And I think that, like, you leave it be. Like, all right, these things, these images aren't accurate representations, but, I mean, the Bible is partially true at best, right? I mean, it's a lot of parables, and we don't know, like, historically how accurate it is. So to pin your hat on Jesus didn't look like X, he looked like Y, I think there's bigger issues to deal with than this. And I think you're asking for a level of pushback from a group of people who have been historically known to be very dangerous, you know, whether it's politically, economically, or just be flat out fucking crazy. I just think it's a bad idea.
Well, so I think Sean, I'm going to project onto him and guess that the reason he said that was to make a valid point that if you want accurate historical representations, then what you're doing here is not historically accurate. I get that point. I agree with you, though. I definitely don't want, if a church wanted to do a more Middle Eastern looking, you know, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, and I would support that. But I don't ever want the government telling a religious organization what they can portray.
Well, and I don't think he said that it should be government enforced. I think it was a call to religious leaders to make the change.
Okay.
You're especially in the United States, there's no church but a majority of your churches are not going to even entertain this. The Catholic,
right.
the Catholic churches aren't going to entertain this. Your Protestant churches aren't going to entertain this. Your Southern Baptist churches aren't going to entertain this. I don't think it goes anywhere. I just think it's an unnecessary.
You think Sean King was just tweaking people with a flick in the face?
I think there are people who will take it seriously and who will try to push this issue, and they probably will make some ground with it in kind of small circles. But I wouldn't. I wouldn't pick up this mantle. I don't know why this is such a thorn in the side of the progressive left. This doesn't come across as you wanting what you say you want, right? You say you want equity. You say you just want the opportunity. You say you want to combat racism. But now some of these things that you're pushing seem like, do you sure that's all you want, or do you want retribution, revenge, ultimately power, and shifting it? So that now it's just you on top and pressing everything that you want and you feel on everyone else and anyone who disagrees with you, you want to take out. Because right. Some of this, that is what that feels like coming from the left, and they need to fucking chill.
And I saw a kid carrying a poster, a meme of a kid carrying a poster. It was a young black kid saying, "We're not trying to start a race war, we're trying to end one." And one way to make a war get worse is to challenge people's faith. Like come at people's faith and try to fuck with their faith.
Yeah,
when people start thinking that, it gets scary.
And, you know, people will get really upset with me because I think a lot of the solutions that we need are built on compromise, right? Like, there's no fucking way you're going to make everybody happy, right? Like, I don't care how scholarly you think you are or how experienced in the streets you think you are. You're just not going to – you don't have an answer that's going to make everybody happy in this. There's not.
Trying to make everybody happy makes almost right. no one happy,
or,
typically.
Or this idea that you're – like, the only way to make this work is that if you concede everything that this one group wants, right? Like, there's no fucking way that that's going to work, right? That you just – if everyone just does what we say, everything will be fine. No, that's not going to work, right? And then this idea that if we just figure out a way to make everybody happy – that'll work. Neither one of those are going to work. It's going to take compromise. It's going to take thought from all different levels of people, from all different experiences. It's going to take time generations, 10, yep. 20, 30, 40, 50 years for this to get to a place where everybody's a little bit more comfortable. And at the end of the day, I don't know if you ever get to that point of supreme balance and utopia, right? But there's no reason to not strive for it.
Sure.
Right? And the question is, how do you get there? You know, and it seems like the approach right now is all or nothing coming from both sides. You have to do it this way for us. And everyone can try to spin it that way. Like if you say it with a smile, like that somehow softens the blow. Or, you know, if you're screaming and yelling, then that means it's the most effective and it's the right thing. I just, you know, we got a long way to go. A lot of people are putting different things out there. I think you try to take as much as you can from the various sources, and ultimately you decide from yourself. But the real change comes in your own sphere of the world, right? Like you've got your outreach of people, your network of people. I have mine. You work on that network, and then you slowly you expand it as you can, as you have opportunities. You make sure that your arguments are sound, you know, grounded in facts, you know, from an objective standpoint. You know, don't try to push a narrative on people. Just be honest and open. And that's how you work it. And if you do that over time and you impact a few people and they're able to impact a few people, that's how you ultimately get change. It's not going to happen fast enough for some people. Some people are going to be very pessimistic of all things, and they're going to sit on the sidelines and they're just going to bitch the whole time. And okay, sorry. I mean, all right, fine, you do that, but I'm going to still do this. I'm not going to sit there and join you because you're not fucking helping anything. You're not effectuating anything. You're just being really fucking obnoxious.
And I think we both said, probably on the air, but certainly off, that this wave of a desire to, you know, push racism out feels more real and more different than anything
I've
experienced.
Feels more real, feels more different. So everybody's got to take advantage of it, right? Yep. I mean, because I, like, ultimately, like, this is the last point before we go. A lot of the things that, like, so issues with the police, you know, the wealth disparities and things like that. Listen, like, the focus is black people. And you know, I talked about this on the show last week a little bit, but part of this needs to move off of race strictly for the fact that this shit impacts white people and Latino people and Asian just as much, right? Like, listen, you here in Cleveland, when I say Parma, what do you think of?
Polish white lady.
Okay, fine. But Parma is an area of Cleveland, lower income, right? A lot of white people. It's the community is relatively mixed.
Right.
Right, but there's a lot of lower, like, middle class to lower poor white people in Parma, right? We make a lot of jokes, like, Parma is kind of like
Cleveland,
our Florida, right?
Right.
Like Parma is the Florida of Cleveland, which is the dumb shit that happens. There was a stint in Parma where there was a gas station where people drove their car through the front of the gas station like 3 days in a row, right? Like, they never got an opportunity to fix it because people kept, like, the first one was an old lady who, like, foot ran through the gas or, you know, got stuck on the gas. Another one, you know, was a guy and his wife who were arguing. And another one was, like, an attempted robbery. But, like, I mean, like, that's just Parma, right? It's our version of Florida here in Cleveland. But, you know, you have a lot of poor white people and lower mm-hmm. income white people. The schools aren't great in Parma. You know, if you look at the crime numbers, they're not great. And you've got, you know, some over-policing that goes there. And I know plenty of guys who work out at my gym from Parma. They all got records. They all got, you know, tatted up, hate the police, smoke weed in public. You know what I mean? Like, they all work, you know, under the table, cash jobs, and, you know, it's the same sort of thing. The same sort of thing that, you know, everyone attacks inner city, urban, you know, the black community for. It happens. It's not about race. It's about resources and opportunity. And that's what this shit is. And it's just happening to a larger percentage of the black community than it is the white community. But there are plenty of white people who would benefit from some of these things that black people are talking about.
Right.
Right. Like, so there's more in common, right? These groups have more in common than they realize, right? And they're butting heads against each other because of the identity politics, because of the race aspect, right? Because both are taught that they need to that you know, you need to identify as a Polish American, you need to identify as an Irish American, you need to identify you're a black, blah 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 blah. So now they fight, right? Now they fight over that shit, and it's just like y'all motherfuckers are literally living in like the same house and doing the same sort of things, right? Like you, like neither one of you have furniture in your front, in your house, and you're sleeping on a mattress on the floor. You both have a fucking pit bull, you know. You both got baby mama drama, and you both are late on child support, but yet you're like butting heads over the same dumb shit.
And the mentality becomes, if black people get this equality, then something's being taken from me. And in fact, the real inequality is economic.
Right.
Because
across the board.
Across the board, absolutely.
And that's the and
so, the disparity there is something that people don't put nearly as much focus on. But take Jerry Jones's yacht that we've talked about. That guy's yacht is worth the city of Parma.
Yes. Yes. Right. Probably more.
Probably more. I would pay $250 million for Parma.
No, fuck no. No.
So, all right, should we close it out there?
I think his yacht has cost more than $250 million.
That was $250 million. I thought, because I think Dan Snyder one-upped him and got one for like $10 million more.
No. Jerry Jones one-upped
Dan Snyder. Okay.
By a lot.
And neither of us will ever own a yacht that size. And no. We're doing way better than a lot of the people we're talking about in terms of economics. Yes. On to that note, thank you. We are at Whiskey Congress on Twitter and Instagram. You can email me, jim@whiskeycongress.com, if you'd like. You can email steve@whiskeycongress.com. Thank you for listening. We're out of here.
Yep. No, yeah, you're right, too.